Welcome back, or welcome to the Single Track Podcast. I am your host, Finn Melanson, and the Golden Ticket Talks keep on rolling. In this episode, we talk with the second place female finisher at the 2022 Bandera 100K, Ellie Pell. Ellie is an East Coaster based in the Finger Lakes region of New York, where she has put up strong results on the local circuit there, as well as at the JFK 50 in recent years. In addition to the recap of her race at Bandera and her initial thoughts on Western States, we talk about her mental approach to ultras, the East Coast trail running scene, including a relatively new media establishment, the Trail Collective, that definitely caught my attention, and much more. Ellie dropped a ton of memorable quotes in this one that I will be thinking about for some time. Her approach to racing is interesting, and I think it will bode well at Western States, but we will see. At the very least, as an East Coast expat myself, I will certainly be rooting for her. Let's get started. Ellie Pell, welcome to the Single Track Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Finn. It's great to meet you.
And I should also say congrats on punching a ticket to Western States in June. What's the immediate reaction now that we've had a couple of days to digest?
Yeah. Well, once I finally got a good night's rest, I'm able to like soak it in. But I have to admit that Saturday night through Monday night, I was kind of like a shaken up bottle of cherry pop. Like I was just like very overwhelmed and very just not sure what happened. But also I knew something happened because I have this golden ticket on my wall right now. And but also just it still isn't completely there that I did this a couple of days ago. But at least I'm not overwhelmed anymore. Like when I don't sleep, everything seems just a lot bigger than it is. Like cleaning the fridge or something just might be like, that is a monumental task right now. Can't do it. But since I've gotten a couple of good nights of rest, things are starting to register in my brain.
And for those that are listening slash watching this on YouTube, when it gets published, that golden ticket behind you is pretty cool. Bigger than I thought.
Yeah, I got it on the plane though. I rolled it up like a school science fair poster style and it was just in my backpack all day and I got it home and it wasn't too I did a pretty good job, I'd have to say. The most thing I got on it is when they handed it to me, my hands were covered in blood and mud and goo. And so there's some of that on the back.
As I was doing research for the show, I checked out your Instagram and I saw the post for the race. One of the coolest descriptions, it said, this one is for the Beast Coast. Can you talk about what that meant more in detail?
Sure. So I live on the East Coast of the United States and I have my whole life. And I like it here. It's a nice place. I would like to travel a little bit just because I didn't grow up traveling. I grew up on a farm and it's hard for farmers to leave their homestead when they've got a lot of things going on. But I didn't have wanderlust as a child, so that's okay. But as I continue to live here and just continue to explore this area, I love it even more. And I am affiliated with this organization called the Trails Collective that's run by my mentor, Ian Golden. And just through him and through racing on the East Coast and running with all the people and seeing all the places, I'm exploding with just this. I want to just let people know how amazing this place is. And it's not exactly like a trail running. I don't think people think of it as like a trail running destination yet. And I think that will change. But right now, I mean, and rightly so, a lot of people think about like Utah, Colorado, California, and those places because they are very popular trail running sites. But I just don't think that the East Coast has gotten the love it deserved. And so during the race, I thought a lot about the people on the East Coast and all of my friends near and far and people that I know personally, people that I know and have met through the Trails Collective just online. And so I really did just, that was for the Beast Coast. That wasn't just me. That was everybody over here. We all took the ticket.
We were talking offline. I'm an ex Beast Coaster. I moved out to Salt Lake City 5 years ago, but we were talking, I lived in Portland, Maine for 25 years. So a lot of sympathy, there's a lot of sentimental value back there. And I also hope the scene blows up. And it's great to see folks like yourself, Marianne Hogan, who's based in Quebec City, or sorry, Montreal, just bring notoriety and recognition. So major kudos. And I just thought it was a badass tagline to an Instagram post.
Thank you. And you know, it's funny you say that because I ran with some wonderful women on Saturday and we chatted and stuff, and not just women, other men as well. And you know, when you get going, you're like, oh, where are you from or whatever. And I'd be like, oh, I'm from New York. And a lot of people most of them said they lived in Boulder now, but they used to live on the East Coast. And I was just like, move back. No. It's really funny how a lot of people do have moved to Colorado and things like that. And I don't think it's a bad thing necessarily. I mean, but you know, we got some great stuff here too. So I'll represent us all the time.
One thing that the East Coast does have is great air quality. So we're recording this on a Wednesday in mid-January. I just got back from a workout and we had some inversion here in Salt Lake City. And I was inhaling all of that. So my voice is a little bit raspy and it's not all sunshine and roses out here in the West. That's for sure. Let me ask one question before we dive into Bandera. And I want to talk about Ian Golden and the Trails Collective and more about the upstate New York running scene. But why don't you think the East Coast trail scene gets more recognition, especially media recognition? Because like when I, you know, click into like I Run Far and all these other outlets in our sport, it's almost all centered on the Mountain West and the West Coast. What's your take there?
I think there's probably a lot of factors that go into it. I don't think it's necessarily malicious. It definitely isn't. I don't think it's purposeful. I think that ultra running getting attention in general is relatively new. And I say that just knowing that we're really enmeshed in it. So we know about it, but a lot of people don't, like even my family barely does, you know? So I think that just recently with the advent of YouTube channels and things like that, like there are a couple creators that are doing it really, really well, and they live on the West Coast. So, I mean, it makes sense that people see things Jameel Corey is putting out, that the Ginger Rudder is putting out, that Billy Yang is putting out, and they're on the West Coast. And you can't fault them for living on the West Coast. It's not like we can say like, Jameel, you should have grew up over here. You know, I mean, that just is how it is.
Right.
I also think that generally, except for now with climate change, the weather on the West Coast is pretty much better than ours. Like, I mean, I will not see the sun until May. So no, probably March, but it's for half of the year. It's a little bit, it's not really that sexy to run on the trails here, I guess. It's cold, it's wet. And so that can complicate things. And you know, that's what we're trying to do with the Trails Collective, is fill the gap and try to get more eyes over here to have like a media presence and stuff like that. And it's just slow building. I mean, Ian's basically a one-man show. Like I was helping him when I lived in Ithaca and I still help him as much as I can, but obviously going, not living there anymore, being in school. So it's just a slow build process that like really one person is doing. And so I think it'll come. It's just, we got to keep pressing on. And I guess coming home with the golden ticket will hopefully help.
Very cool. And I promise we're going to come back to this later in the conversation, because promoting the East Coast trail scene is a major theme of this show. But let's talk a bit about Bandera. I'm first curious why you chose it, and because there's a series, there's Black Canyon 100K, there's the Canyons 100K. They've added other new events to this series. What attracted you to go for it at Bandera?
So actually a couple of years ago, I was talking with Ian about golden ticket races. I think it was when I first heard of Western States. It was probably like, you know, I think I won a small ultra. It was probably that. And then you start like, oh, you know, what could I, you know, I think another thing you mentioned off the show, I had a post that said success gets to your head and failure gets to your heart. Well, I think that early in my running career, that kind of course it happened. I mean, you do something brand new, you run a distance you never thought you could, and you win. Like, even if it's like a 100-person race, like that, I would be lying if I said that didn't get to my head a little bit. And I think that, so at that point I must have asked Ian, like, if I decide to go for a golden ticket race, he knows how I run, like what my style is, like, which one do you think would be the best for me to do? And he mentioned Bandera. Did I ever sign up for it? No, I forgot about it. I mean, like, it's anything, it's fleeting, you know, success gets to your head, it's fleeting. And so, I didn't think about it for a couple of years. Like I think I ran my first ultra in 2016. It is 2022. So it's been a little bit, and I was just doing other things. The only time I ever identified as a certain type of runner, as an ultra runner, that was like a, not a good season for me, injuries and stuff like that. So I did other things. Like I qualified for the Olympic trials. I tried other, tried other things, including ultras, but never really considered seriously doing a golden ticket race. I signed up for my first one after the Olympic trials in 2020, and then the world shut down. That was not Bandera. That was Lake Sonoma, because it was a 50-mile race, and that's how far I had run. I still have not run that race. Hopefully I will run it this April. It's rolled over 2 years, so we'll see. But then I guess speeding up till this past year, I ran my first 100K in September at Virgil Crest, and I absolutely loved it. And I gave myself permission to not like the distance. Like I said to myself, Ellie, it's okay. If you only like 50 miles, if this is too long, you don't have to do this again. It's really okay. And I gave myself that grace, but thankfully I really liked it. It was a good time out there. And so that went well. I recovered very fast from that. I ate a lot during the race. I'm a pretty good eater. And so about less than a month later, then I ran a 50 miler on the road, and I ended up setting the women's record for the year for 50 milers. And I don't have it now. Someone beat it, but for like a solid 6 days, I was right there, you know, at the top. And then I think right after that, I thought, you know, I'm feeling pretty fit and I'm recovering really well. Maybe I should just throw my hat into Bandera. So I texted Ian, of course, like, cause I usually, if I want to do something that's kind of bigger, or I usually ask what his opinion is. Sometimes I take it, sometimes I don't. That's the way it is. And so he said, yeah, that doesn't sound like a bad idea. And so then I was searching for like figuring it out. And then he got the idea to put a team together to go down. So he ended up inviting other good trail runners from the East Coast. I think at one point he had sent invitations out to about 9 people, but for reasons like injury, just things going on, other races, 3 of us ended up going down. So
you had a crew. You had a crew at Bandera.
I did. Yeah. So there were myself, Riley Brady, who has not lost this year. They are fantastic. David Hedges, same, has not lost this year. And then Riley's parents were crewing for them and for David and I as well. So yeah, 3 racers and we had 2 crews. So it was pretty cool. It's my first experience doing that either. Never had a crew before.
And it sounds like, maybe even multiple years in advance, you were identifying a golden ticket as the goal. So like going into this race, was it golden ticket or bust?
No, actually it was probably like the exact opposite. I thought about a golden ticket 5 years ago, but honestly, I forgot about it. Like I don't plan that far in advance. And so going to this race, actually, I felt very fit. Like I knew I was there. But I also knew the field's deep, things happen, this is a long race. So I didn't make my race goal about the golden ticket. And I've done that for the past like couple races now, is I've made it about being able to work as hard as I can and not giving up. And framing most of the race like that has been really good for getting me to take care of my nutrition, to take care of things that I need to take care of, to run within myself and not try not to get too competitive with people in the beginning. And then at the end of the race, that's kind of when I will be more competitive and I didn't let myself think about the golden ticket until I was under the arches. Like I really just didn't. I just didn't want to give up. That's what I thought about.
And that's interesting because we've had a couple other folks from Bandera this past weekend on the pod, and they've talked about how their intention was to lead from the front of the race. They were both going for golden tickets. However fast the front pack was going out, they were going to be right there. It sounds like, and I don't want to make assumptions, but it sounds like you just had like your own splits. You were going to run your own race. And if the chips fell the way they did, great, you get a golden ticket. Is that correct?
Yeah. And I think that's how I think about training too, because ultra running is such, there's so many variables that I train myself in a way to capitalize on the day. If it's a lucky day, like if it's a good day, I want to be in the fitness to be able to capitalize on that. And so I knew that going into Bandera, I was very fit. And so I just had to run smart and stay within myself and run my own race and not burn too many matches in the beginning. And then if I'm in it in the second half of the race, that's when I can start thinking about where other runners are. But those things are secondary to just not giving up and working as hard as I can.
Let's go right to like the last 10 to 20 miles of the race, which I'm fascinated by because, and I'll admit this, I'm a Salt Lake City local. One of my friends, Leah Yingling, was in the race and I was only following on Twitter. And I think at one point she was firmly in second place and it looked like she was going to also snag a ticket. Maybe talk about how you moved up in the field, maybe the moment where you passed her and got into second position behind Marianne. It sounded like it was a pretty thrilling portion of the race.
Yeah, I mean, about as thrilling as an ultra race is, I guess. I gotta say, it's not the Olympic it's not the Olympic sprint there, but no.
Hey, we're super fans here.
Yeah, it's thrilling. I mean, it's great. You know, once they splice all the clips together, I bet it could be thrilling. I mean,
it's nothing a good montage can't overcome.
Yes. So Leah passed me at about just before the 50K mark. So I guess we both had the plan to not let our competitiveness drive us too fast in the beginning. And so she caught up to me at the only climb basically that I had to walk on the loop. And she just took off right by me. Like we talked for a little bit and we sort of came into the 50K mark together, but I knew I was going to stop at 50K and take care of myself. And she just kept going. So at about 50K, I changed my shoes because it was really muddy. There was just, I needed to take care of myself. And I told myself that's how you run your race. And so she got a little bit ahead of me there, but I think she kept gaining on me like in the first half of the second loop. And I think at one point she was up by like at least 10 to 15 minutes on me. And Sarah Beal, I think, was gaining on me. I mean, yeah. I wasn't really thinking about that though. I have to be honest. I was sort of like making sure that I was taking in my nutrition correctly and trying to weather a little bit of lows, but they weren't super low. It was more just like, I wish there were pierogies here, but I'm eating this baby food. It's fine. And more stuff like that. And then, I guess slowly and steadily, I maintained like my effort. I'm amazed, but not because I felt like this was true at how even my splits are on both halves. And so once I got to about 10 miles to go, I was told that Leah had just left the aid station a minute before me. She's running very scared. She was asking about you. And so maybe you can do this. And still at that point, I knew what Anne, my wonderful crew member, was telling me, like, you can get a golden ticket, but I didn't think about that. What I thought was strategically in my mind, if I was 10 minutes down and now I'm less than 1 minute down, all I have to do is maintain my pace because she is obviously moving slower than I am. That's what I thought. And so that's what I did. I just kept moving my pace and kept making sure that I was taking in nutrition because that's a really big, that definitely me being consistent in those areas was, had, it was the most important thing. And so I caught up to them at about 6 miles to go. And we talked, I said, you look great, good luck. And she said the same thing to me, but I passed decisively. Like I didn't slow down or anything. I tried not to appear like I was suffering, which I really wasn't. I mean, I was very tired, but I had the mindset and motivation to pass decisively and keep going. And so I passed her at about 6 miles to go. And then we came into the last aid station. And I think she was behind me by like 20 seconds or something at that point. That's what I know. I did not look behind me at all. Like I was not going to run scared. I was going to run my race. And I just blew through the aid station because I had enough in my vest. And once I got to about 4 miles to go was when I forced down my last gel, which was the hardest part of the race. I think that last gel, I wanted to die. And then that's when I sort of decided it's time to go. And so I tried to turn it on a little bit, but also knowing that I had that last climb where she caught me on the first loop. So, but I did know that it was a rolling downhill for the last couple miles, which is my specialty, actually, I think, or I don't think I have a specialty, but I like that. So I was ready to run some rolling downhill. And then when I got to the last climb, I power hiked like I've never power hiked before. I blacked out a little bit, but I made it to the top. And that's when I started to like sprint and just was like, get to the arches. And I did not think about the golden ticket until I made it to the arches because I was just focused on my race plan. Like my brain doesn't have enough space to think about like, what's the reward? It's just like, be here now, do this.
Well, I think that that's an incredibly rare skill. I think that most people, myself included, would be, our minds would be distracted by other things. For example, like the golden ticket and the pain we're experiencing, stuff like that. So your ability to zero in on the present moment and to also believe in like a long-term race strategy, like throughout the course of the race, that's impressive. And I think maybe we'll talk about your mental strategy in general later in the conversation as well, but kudos there. I'll also say as a fan of Leah, I'm hoping that she gets a ticket at Canyons because it's such a close call there at Bandera. And to me, it sounds exciting at least that you had that experience where it was relatively down to the wire as far as 100Ks go. And I don't know if she listens, but if you are listening, Leah,
good luck. After I passed her and I purposely was like, you're not going to look back. I told myself that just to keep working really, really hard. And if she passes you, she deserves it. And that was actually really freeing because it freed me to like try extremely hard and like almost black out at the top of that climb, but also know that if she beat me, she deserved it because I gave it what I had.
So are you going to be going to Western States in June? Did you accept the golden ticket?
I did accept the golden ticket.
Okay. So yes. Are you clearing your schedule? Is everything between now and June just like fully in prep for the race or do you have anything in between?
Well, I've never run 100 miles, so I gotta get there. Like I mean, obviously now I guess I do have a 6 month long-term plan of, I would like to run 100 miles and get through it, like, but not slog through it. I'd like to do it with fit in that way, but I also want to do it healthy. So I am signed up, like I said, for Lake Sonoma, my rollover for 2 years. So I know I will be doing a race in April. And that's really as far as I've thought about things because I try to take at least a week to 2 weeks after a big event to not sign up for things and just go slow through the process of thinking about what's next. But I don't let myself sign up for anything or, I really need to take in and just really experience what just happened on Saturday. And thinking about the future too much, it doesn't give me enough time to appreciate and thank my body for what it just did.
That's a great thing to think about right there. Kudos to that. Although you do strike me though as somebody who enjoys preparation. So I'm curious, given that you haven't run 100 miles yet, how do you go about gathering information and strategy on how to execute this at a level you feel is successful? Like, what do you look to? Who do you look to for advice and whatnot?
Well, I just Googled Runner's World first 100 mile plan. It looks pretty solid, so might start there. So I'm kidding, but actually for Runner's World plans, I mean, they're fine. Like we joke about it, but you know what? That's great. I think they're great. I am very lucky to have a lot of people in my life who are extremely intelligent, and I take in all the information and I know how my body works. And so I will do my best in that way. I've talked to Ian about different things. I do not have a coach. I don't know about that. It's still, there are a lot of things up in the air, this cloud above my head. There's a lot of things up there that I just haven't delved deeply into yet. So I would like to prepare in the best way. What that means right now, 4 days after this race, where my spring was decided, and I'm very excited about that, but I just haven't thought extremely about logistics yet. So I will do my best, but I don't have any secret plan yet.
Cool. Well, maybe we can talk about how you approach these races from the mental side, because you've dropped a lot of interesting insights already. And I'll just repeat the quote you said, which is, success easily gets to your head, failure easily gets to your heart. And there's a lot to unpack there. Can you talk about why that quote is attractive to you and how you've applied it to your training?
Sure. So I can only speak for myself. So sometimes when I do well, immediately my mind wants to go to the like external validation of what that means. And that's great for like a little dopamine hit for a while, but it's not like a long-term feeling fulfilled about myself. And then when I say failure always gets to my heart is like any time that, even if it's just being unlucky on race day, or for some reason my nutrition doesn't work that day, sometimes when I fail in that way, I guess, I think of it as something deep internally wrong with me. Mm. And that can really, excuse my French, but like fuck with my head. And so being aware that those are my human nature tendencies helped me, give me some perspective. And it's still work, but it gets a little bit easier if I know that I'm naturally going to do that.
Mm. You're a great writer, by the way. I'm going to drop one more quote that you wrote on your Instagram. It is when competition is used as a means of creating a self-image relative to others that the worst in a person tends to come out, end quote. That's deep.
I can't say, I really have this belief that no thought or thing is original. So I remember writing that and thinking, did I read that somewhere? Like I might have, I read so much, like it's possible. And so like, maybe I just like gobbled it or whatever to something else. So somebody probably said that, but anyway, what I kind of was going for in that three-part post is, and all these posts are really, they are things that I struggle with, right? So sometimes I feel like when I'm annoyed or upset at something I think somebody else is doing, it's more that like I see in them something that internally I don't like about myself. And so I think that competition is great. Like, I mean, it was the coolest thing to like battle with Leah for the last 4 miles, you know, but it's when that competition becomes like a measuring stick in a deeper way than just that race. I mean, just because I came out on top of a race, doesn't mean I'm any better. It just like, it means that I like that day, that situation, what was in my favor. And so I think that when I can zoom out and realize that like competition isn't a measuring stick towards some societal expectation, that's when I think competition is like best used.
That's beautiful. It brings to mind another quote, and I'm sorry, we're just trading quotes back and forth.
That's great. Love it.
I think the quote is like, compete with yourself and root for others. It's something along those lines. And that just, if I could sum up what you just said, it sounds like that to me, which is cool.
Yeah. I like that too.
But maybe we can provide some additional actionable advice on top of all that perspective for listeners. And I'm curious how you like to mentally prepare for these races in addition to your physical training, and maybe what advice you have based on what's worked and what hasn't for listeners.
Sure. I guess because Bandera is fresh in my mind, so I guess I can just talk about that. I don't know if I necessarily have a strategy. For Bandera, I do a lot of visualization, and I guess the term would be visualization. I imagine how the race plays out in any different strategy, like best case scenario, worst case scenario, maybe like a scenario. And then I imagine how I'll respond to those. But then I also imagine like what the outcome will be like after the race or something like that. Like if I fail epically, will my life change that much? No. If I do spectacularly, will my life change that much? Probably not. And the thing is like, I'm very happy with how my life is right now, even though like, yeah, I'm finishing an undergrad degree a little bit later than normal, but I'm really happy with my life and with the relationships that I have. And so an outcome of a race, it's my self-worth isn't tied to it. So it's not really going to change like the underlying Ellie. I mean, it'll be disappointing, and yeah, I get sad about things, but just reminding myself before the race that like, no matter what happens, this doesn't change who you are.
Where does that skill set come from to remove your self-esteem from the outcome of an effort, whether it's positive or negative? Is that something that you've always been good at, or is it something you've practiced? And is that where the visualization piece has been helpful?
I have not always been good at it. It has been, I practice continually, actually. I think I realized like, the highest of highs are not worth like the lowest of lows. And if I tied my self-worth to these things, I would never be truly like, a loss would be like any loss or anything that I didn't think was good enough would be completely devastating. And I just don't like to feel like that, I guess. So it's not like I woke up one day and was like, yeah, I'm not gonna tie my self-worth to this. It was a practice, and I still practice. I wanted to do sports psychology in grad school. I wanted to do that. And just because I don't want to do that now doesn't mean that I don't use those practices all the time. And one of my very close friends is a sports psychologist. And so it's still a practice, but I think it really started when I met some other women who were extremely fast, and they convinced me to train for the Olympic trials with them. And I realized it's a heck of a lot more fun to do this being like comrades than competitors. And that doesn't mean that we're not going to try to run as fast as we can around the track and, you know, compete with each other in that way. But it's like that person is also the same person that's like has her hand on my back while I'm throwing up on the side of the track. Like, and so just seeing other women as, like I said, I like the word comrades. It sounds like we're in the army.
Yeah.
So seeing other women and other people as that, as factors that are going to make me better, not things, obstacles I need to overcome.
You've dropped so many awesome quotes in this episode.
I'm sweating right now.
So I got to repeat this one again. The highest of highs are not worth the lowest of lows. So I'm not sure I totally agree with that because I'm kind of a masochist, but that made me think. I'm going to have to think about that one post.
You know, I got boosted today, so I think that's what it is. Like, these are the symptoms, everybody.
Awesome. Well, no, cool. I think, I was just talking with Tyler Fox, who's one of the other Golden Ticket winners, and
his wife's name is Ellie.
I know. Coincidence? I don't know. I forgot where I was going with that, but maybe we can transition a bit to the East Coast running scene again, and specifically the Trails Collective, because you were talking a bit about that earlier and you were mentioning Ian Golden, and we're always trying to problem solve on this podcast. And one of the problems we're trying to solve is like, how do we shed more light on the East Coast? And you talked about how all of the content creators are on the West Coast. So as we enter into this piece of the discussion, just give a quick summary of what Trails Collective is and what it's trying to do, what it's trying to accomplish.
Sure. And I'm sorry that I lost your train of thought, but we were going to talk about Tyler Fox. So while I'm spewing this, if you want to remember, we can come back to it.
Oh, we will. Yeah, it's okay. This podcast is very informal and the listeners will forgive us.
So the Trails Collective is in a one sentence nutshell, it's here. It's an East Coast trail running resource. So it started by Ian Golden, who owns Finger Lakes Running Company in Ithaca, New York. He also owns Red Newt Racing, which was my racing team, but now I wear the Trails Collective logo. And really, he loves the East Coast. Like, he loves trail running here. He just is very involved in everything in on the East Coast running wise. And also, he ran for Congress a couple of years ago. Like, he's just a very genuinely good person who wants to see everyone succeed. And also everybody get involved in our sport if they want to. And so part of this is like raising awareness and also highlighting different races and race directors on the East Coast that have really amazing races that they're just kind of small and nobody knows about them. But all it takes is like one post or one thing to get it known. And so I think Ian he's very busy. Like, he does so many things. He has three daughters, a wonderful wife. Like, but I think if you want change, you have to be that change. And so Ian is willing to be that change. And so he started the Trails Collective, and it's a website, trailscollective.com. And we also have a YouTube channel. I also put out the podcasts. So any YouTube video now is a podcast as well. My part in the beginning was I hosted a interview series with East Coast runners. Some were like elite and others were like race directors, things like that. And I put those out as well. And then there's also gear reviews, racing reviews. There's an online store. So it's really just an East Coast trail running resource. And that's what we're building there. And so I think that now Ian it just took a little bit because, you know, you've got to figure out the money situation and stuff, but he does want to support more runners. And so I think this was a good experiment he's not going to stop even if nobody won anything, but it was a good like first test to see like how this would work. How could the Trails Collective send talented runners from the East Coast to do different races? And in turn, hopefully people there will notice us and then more eyes on the East Coast. And so that goes back to my blog post. Like, I knew that people were going to see that I won this ticket, and I want them to know where I'm from and who actually won this ticket, which was the Beast Coast.
I was just glancing at the website while you were talking. It looks awesome. Like, it is huge. Kudos to you and Ian. This is the closest thing I've seen to like an East Coast equivalent to like an I Run Far or a Free Trail or an Aeroviper running. This is so cool. Way to go.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. We're doing our best. Ian has a great website developer. His weekly rundowns are like, they're very well done. And I think now that I'm putting out the podcast to them, like, I think we'll get more listens. It's just because every week he emails like the winner of like every race or like the top like 10 of every race to get sound bites and stuff like that. And he puts them in there. And then like, once you see yourself on a well-produced video, it's just so exciting on the inside, you know? So I think it's great. I love it. I mean, that's how I know what's going on in the East Coast is I watch it every week or I listen to it every week. It's great.
Yeah, this is awesome. And I want to have Ian on the pod soon.
Please do.
People that are prolific like him, they're just, you know, they have their hand in everything and they do it all well at the same time. I'm fascinated. That sounds very cool.
Yeah, and he is the first person like that truly believed in just in me. Like, and I'm not saying that he was like, oh, I think that one there is going to get a golden ticket one day. Like, no, never. But it was more like I was really lost in my 20s, just figuring things out, kind of like we all are. And he was just somebody that was very supportive in anything that I wanted to do, even before I was on his racing team, before anything. And that has meant so much to me. Like I could cry right now. Like he's just, and it's not just me. Like he would do it to anybody. I mean, right now I'm like, because of this rigmarole or whatever happened, I'm a little bit front and center, but well, actually no, because Rachel's and Riley are doing things next month, so they might be, but anyway, he would do it for anybody. Like he would drop anything for anyone. And it's kind of like I've never experienced that before in any person.
Very cool. Very cool. So you're based in the Finger Lakes area of New York. And I'm curious, while we're still on this topic of just shedding a spotlight on East Coast trail running, maybe paint a picture of the area that you train in and what makes it so awesome. Maybe some of the local races in the area as well. Yeah, I think listeners would be curious to get some insight there because we know Utah so well. We know Colorado so well. There's just been enough stories told there. And so I'm just curious.
Yeah, so there's a really nice variety of things. So if you want more like rugged beast coast, you want to go like Manitou's Revenge, 54 miler runs like 100 miler. The people that do that are made of something else. Like they are made of like iron blood, I tell you. So we got that, Breakneck Point marathons, very like tons of elevation gain, you know, and after I say all these things, everybody should go to the Trails Collective because it has like most top scenic races in the East Coast, top like hardest races in the East Coast, like fastest races in the East Coast. So you can pick whatever you want. So I would encourage people to go there because I'm obviously just going to say the races that like I like and then also are well known. So I've never done those two yet, but you never know. And then we have races like Twisted Branch, which is a point-to-point race in Naples, from Naples to Hammondsport, which is the most beautiful race. You've got a little bit of everything. It's got some rocky things, but you've got a little bit of runnable, but there's a lot of elevation too. And then in the last 5 miles, you go over a mountain. It's like, it's really, really cool. And it's in the backyard of, like, you would never know those things were there unless you ran in the woods. My favorite race over here is probably Many on the Jenny. It's a 40 miler in Letchworth State Park, which Letchworth is nicknamed the Grand Canyon of the East. It's beautiful. I think 2 out of the 4 years that I've run it, there's been a rainbow over like the gorge when you're turning around to go to the other side of the gorge. The first half, super runnable. The second half, there's a lot of gullies, but I mean, most of us are tired anyway, so it's okay to walk. I mean, so I've done that all 4 years now. I'm going to miss it this year because it's like the weekend before Western States. I just shouldn't run 40 miles before 100. I guess I can't do that. Let's see. But then we also have like some good road stuff if you like the road ultras. And yeah, there's a mix of tons of things, but I would highly recommend going to the website and looking at like the gnarliest races and stuff. And yeah, it's got a little bit of everything.
I just clicked into that section. You're basically giving me a tour in real time. And it made me think of another business idea. And maybe Trails Collective can do this, but it's like doing an ultimate guide for each race where it doesn't just tell you about like how the course runs, but you get a ton of Strava files aggregated, a bunch of race reports, a list of the best Airbnbs that are runner friendly, the best flights to the local airport.
Oh, that's good. Oh, don't I think tell that Ian, would be pretty he'll good. Start that tomorrow and then he'll get even less than his 30 minutes allotted of sleep a day. That's a good idea though.
By the way, I still can't remember what I was going to say about Tyler Fox, but I promise it was going to be good and we'll just never know. And I'll remember it while I fall asleep tonight. Let's start to wind down a bit. One thing I didn't ask you earlier that I want to ask you now is, do you have any expectations whatsoever for Westerns? Do you have any particular time goals, place goals, or is it going to be similar to the Bandera experience?
I have to say that like my strategy for Bandera worked pretty well. So like why change? I have not thought about it yet. Like I said, it's still too fresh in my mind. And it will be my first 100 mile experience. And so have like a bunch of things that I've saved. The only thing I've really done is saved like every post that I can find from reputable running websites about Western states to read. I'm a big reader, so I will read a lot of things. But it's hard to have expectations when I still am hobbling around here and I've never done it before. So that's where I'm at right now.
I think that's totally fair. I think that whatever worked at Bandera, it will probably work again at Western States, and we can expect you to have a good performance.
All right. Well, actually, I took one gamble at Bandera, and that was in the first half, I felt a blister under my big toe. And I was like, do I stop? I don't know. Like, it's not that bad. And so the one gamble I took was, no, I'm just going to keep going on it, and hopefully it'll just pop and I will deal with my bloody foot later. And it worked. Like, no lie. I don't know how that worked, but I'm not going to do that at Western States. I will take care of that immediately. But that's the one gamble that I took the whole day, and it actually worked. Now my the underside of my toe is like, I don't know how that worked, but it worked. Don't do that, anyone. I'm not going to do that ever again. So that's the one thing for Bandera. Don't do that.
Let's go to the lightning round here. The first question that I have for you, what is something you've either read, listened to, or watched recently that has changed the way you think or see the world that you want to share with the audience?
Sure. So I just finished a book called Sapiens by Yuval Noah Harari. And it's a very easy read for what it talks about. It's kind of like a history of modern humankind, but it also goes into the psychology of humans and how that might have developed. Again, we don't know. These are just theories. But also, it talked about a lot about how things that we believe in and how we believe in things, even if they don't exist, right? So like, I see this, you know, this chapstick, and I believe in it because I can see it. It's physically here in my hand. But I also believe in markets, in capitalism, in, you know, I believe in that stuff, but that doesn't exist. It doesn't really exist. It only exists because we believe in it. And it's amazing that like humans, really, we've evolved so much because of our ability to believe in things that do not exist. And that's just like really trippy. And I love thinking about that.
Okay. I got to break my own rule and interject, because I also loved that book. And like you just said, my biggest takeaways were how important it is to be able to tell a story really well, and our shared reliance on collective delusions.
Yes. Yes. It's like, it's so crazy. And now I just think about like, things like, I just went through like a lot of things that I believe in, and I'm like, oh, you know, that's a story. But also, it's not like it's not, he doesn't make it seem like it's a bad thing. Like, we're being foolish.
Right, I mean,
cause there are a lot of stories that I tell myself while I'm in pain that keep me going, even though like maybe they shouldn't. It's like, you know, so yeah, it's just a very interesting book. I liked it.
The sequel, Homo Deus, is also excellent. It takes all of his thinking, you know, pre 2020, and then projects what the world is going to look like 100 years down the line, 1,000 years down the line. And
I'm a little scared of that though. Like, I don't know if I want to know.
It's pretty optimistic. He's just like, here are the skills that you need to thrive in, you know, XYZ world. It's cool.
Oh, okay.
Cool. Anyways, great recommendation.
Thank you.
Yeah. Great recommendation. Next question on Instagram again. Common theme here in the conversation, but you have a good Instagram. Your subtitle says, having fun isn't hard when you have a library card. Explain that.
So I am a bibliophile. I love to read. That is what I do all the time. And so I also, when I was younger, like, we had 3 TV channels, and one of them was PBS. And every day after school, from like age 5 to 8 or 9, I'd watch this show called Arthur. It was Arthur the Aardvark. And it was a great show. And now that I'm looking back, like, how to educate children, and wow. But every couple of us, like, they'd have like jingles on some episodes. And one of the jingles was like it was about having fun isn't hard if you've got a library card. And then they went to the library and showed you like how cool it was to you. And the Dewey Decimal System is your friend. Like, it's just like, And so I think that that just, I mean, I don't have anything wise to say. It's mostly like, yeah, having fun isn't hard if you got a library card. And that was just, I just thought it was funny. And if it makes me laugh, good enough. It's my Instagram, right?
I think reading is cool as hell. It's awesome. Last question here. You're given a billboard with white space. What message would you put on it for all to see? And this is on a well-populated highway, so a lot of cars.
Sure. So I think I would say that good people sometimes choose poor methods, so be kind.
That is excellent. That is excellent. Hey, I have so enjoyed this conversation. Huge congrats on the golden ticket. It's been great to get to know you. Can't wait to follow your training. If other folks want to get in touch or they want to find you on Instagram or Strava, how do they do so?
Sure. So I am trying to be very responsive on social media. But if it's like something longer or you want like to go back and forth, like better, I like email. I'm more of a long form person. And then I can like, then I can understand the person better or, and I can respond better, but I do answer direct messages. And then I also, I do some writing on my website, elliepell.com, and I have my Bandera recap up there. So if you want to check that out, and yeah, I'm pretty easy to find though. So my email is in my Instagram bio.
We will link to all of it in the weekly newsletter and in the show notes. And I'll also make sure to link the Trails Collective website as well. And I cannot wait to see that take off and continue to build.
Yeah. I hope you get to meet Ian and have him on. He'd be like block out like 3 hours. That guy has so many stories. Oh, I can't wait to go to Western States with him because like, I will find out so much more.
Very cool. Ellie, great to meet you. I'm sure we'll have you on the pod again at some point in time. But until then, again, wish you the best of luck in training and with your race.
Thank you so much. It was great to meet you.
Hey, thanks for listening. I just have the same usual requests. Please consider giving us a review in Apple, a rating in Spotify, and share us on social, Instagram, Twitter, wherever you spend the most time. I know I say it all the time, but yes, it truly does help more folks discover the show. So thank you. As always, I am your host, Finn Melanson. I am grateful for your support, and I will talk to you on the next episode.